Well, it's just gone 25 to 7 here on Classic 102.7. Time for tonight's Classic Business. I'm going to call it an interview, not a panel, because we are struggling to get hold of a Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs Deputy Minister, Andries Nel, who we were promised by his communications people would be popping out of an event tonight to chat to us, which is unfortunate because we've got the citizens of this country protesting on the streets. We've got residents of El Dorado Park, Freedom Park and surrounding areas blocking roads with burning tires and rubble yesterday. Protests over service delivery seem to be a daily occurrence in the traffic reports, in the news. Protesters demanding housing and land and electricity and jobs, which they say government has promised them for years now. It's really one of the expanding weapons of choice for angry South Africans. The occupation of major arterial roads is another, such as the N3 protest at the Mooi River Plaza, in the name of the visibility of grievances. It's almost as if citizens have become conditioned to go out and destroy things in order to get government's attention. But beyond the obvious criminal element, it's symptomatic of a much deeper, far more worrying problem. We've seen the steady decay of local government over two decades now. Local government across the country is in crisis. A cursory look at the Constitution, a look at the Municipal Systems and Structures Act, the Intergovernmental Framework Relations Act, all of those things that are meant to envisage a local government that provide for the people are indeed worlds apart. So for all the transparency the law requires in relation to municipal financial management and the consultation envisaged as being so integral to integrated development programs, the reality is that local government is anything but. It's largely dysfunctional. Now, there's obviously a new administration at the helm, but years of rot won't be removed overnight. And it's imperative that we replace the rot with functioning administrations to ensure that we can avoid a national crisis in the making. Well, to find out how we do that, it's a great pleasure to welcome Sithole Mbanga, CEO of the South African Cities Network, which looks quite deeply at the state of local government, the big metros in particular. Sithole, good to have you on the show.
Good evening and thanks very much.
Our Deputy Minister of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs and the Minister, Zweli Mkhize, recently announced the following around the state of municipalities. 7% are classified as well-functioning, 31% are reasonably functional, we've got 31% almost dysfunctional, and the remaining 31% are classified as dysfunctional. So you can say 62% really in that dysfunctional or pretty much close to being dysfunctional bracket. It seems to be a crisis. Can you just contextualize the scale of the problem at local government level? Because it sounds like a national emergency.
Yeah, I think it is. And I'm happy that you're saying it's a national emergency, so that it's not just a local government problem, or should not be seen only as a problem of municipalities. Not only is it problematic, but it's also very complex. Complex, and I think by the examples that you're referring to, it's becoming extremely volatile. We think that what we see on the surface, the protest, violent or not, are not in themselves because they are just symptomatic. They are a symptom of something that is much more deeper, and that which in our opinion is deeper can be categorized into a number of issues. I mean, the first one is the fact that systemically there is a problem. I think the system is beginning to crumble. We do not have a lot of intelligence, particularly on quite a number of things, the movement of people, the impact of the movement of people from one area or to the other on the infrastructure. So you'll find a town that had been conceptualized and built, let's say, 100 years ago, meant to cater for 100 people, and now you have 1,000 people. So the infrastructure just crumbles. It's also a structural issue. I think the relationship that ought to exist on the one hand, within the public sector realm, in other words, national, provincial, and local government, but also the relationship that ought to exist between the public sector and the private sector, but also the relationship that needs to exist between the private sector, public sector, and civil society, but then take it further, the relationship that needs to exist, the functional, productive relationship that must exist between those three sectors, including sectors that are in what you could refer to as your innovation sector, your universities that are supposed to give us solutions, people that are doing research,
right,
like ourselves, still has a long way to go for that to form.
I think you've just contextualized in a very succinct way the complexity of the challenge that we face. I want to hone in on one or two of those issues. Let's focus on infrastructure, because a lot of that is still legacy and historical hangover from the past. And if you look at rural municipalities in particular, they don't have very large economies, so they're expected to expand infrastructure and services to the citizens, very often in vast sprawls in rural villages, without having the economic drivers to build that off their own revenue and their own balance sheet. So we have what is called the municipal infrastructure grant, which then is supposed to step in and help here and fund that shortfall and hopefully get a municipality up to a state where it can actually start attracting the private sector in and building its own economy. That system, though, just take me through it, because if you look at some of the reports that have emerged, a great deal of the problem seems to lie in the fact that of the money that is allocated via the municipal infrastructure grant, a lot of it isn't effectively spent. So if you look at the numbers, it's funded from Treasury over the medium term expenditure framework. Mm-hmm. National government's making an allocation of just under 50 billion. We've got 16 billion for this financial year. But historically, a lot of that money has been unspent. In that period, the past 5 years since 2013, we've seen a total of 3.5 billion in transfers stopped and reallocated because municipalities just aren't spending this money effectively. And there was a total of just over 8 billion that was failed, mm-hmm. that wasn't spent. So it's not that the money isn't there. There seems to be a strong skills capacity issue to actually spend that money, to scope projects and deliver.
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying. I think the one thing that we must never make a mistake of is to assume that the problem or the challenge is uniform across all 280 plus municipalities. It's definitely not the same. So what you see in a deep rural municipality like Mkhanyakude in the north of KZN province, and what you see in another deep rural area, let's say in the Northern Cape, is not necessarily the same. There are variables that you need to understand, which variables, when they play themselves out there, their impact is different. And similarly, you can never think that what happens in, let's say, eThekwini, Durban, is necessarily the same as that which will happen, let's say, in Nelson Mandela Bay, although both of them are metropolitan municipalities. So the first principle is to differentiate. So it gets complex when you now have to find differentiated solutions across 280 municipalities. And yet, the framework within which you are working, whether it's the municipal systems or the structures, is one single framework. Hence, if Deputy Minister Nell was here, one of the things I'm sure he would have wanted to refer to is the principle of differentiated support and analysis to municipalities. Hence, how you support metropolitan municipalities is going to have to differ to how you support your local municipalities and district municipalities, and again, depending on where they are. Secondly, the money can never be enough. You think it's there, but actually, if I were to take you on a totally different subject, and let's look at who is really building the city, it's the private sector. The private sector is spending a lot of money building cities, but of course, they've got the option of choosing where to build and where not to build. The public sector doesn't have that. Hence, whatever money we think is there actually gets to be dispersed across the geography of the country. And the attempt is to try to disperse those financial resources in an equitable way. So it then gets much more complicated. Then you look at something else, capacity. So MIG gets to be distributed, But sometimes there's no capacity to intelligently expand on whatever the migrant or the amount of migrant might be. Fourthly, there's massive urbanization. So sometimes you think you're in a rural municipality, you had 100 people. The next day they're up, they're gone. And you have been provided migrant. What do you do with that money? Because in part, you also do not want to return it to the national fiscus, to the national purse. You wish you could use it differently. But that money or that financial resource comes with a lot of strings and conditions. So actually, it's not necessarily the money that you would have wanted. It's not the type of resource that you would have wanted to start to package multi sources of revenue into the municipality in order to thrive. I sound like I'm generalizing. And hence, I started off by saying you have to differentiate.
I mean, we do. We were talking about a very complex matter and spending some time north of Polokwane over the long weekend. One is exposed to some of the, on the ground, the challenges of the sprawl and delivering services in an environment where we don't have the sort of densification that we have in Johannesburg, which makes it a little bit easier. But Johannesburg has its own issues with mass inward migration that you were mentioning earlier. And there's also the land debate then that needs to be thrown in that particular pot. Obviously, the minister, very mindful of this, William Kize, is getting to grips with his new portfolio, and he's looking at the urgent deployment of so-called technical capacity experts in the form of district technical support teams. That sounds like quite a good idea, talking to what you were saying about understanding the problems on the ground in the various areas and how differentiated they are. How do you see those district technical support teams playing out from a mandate perspective? Because we're obviously talking about national government now going down into the realm of local government to give support, which it's allowed to do, by the way, in terms of the constitution. How do you see that playing itself out?
I think what the minister has done and the entire department is actually a very good initiative. And there have been previous attempts, but if for any reason an intervention is led from outside and is not embraced by the receiving municipality, it becomes problematic in the sense that once those that have been requested to come and assist leave town, then the town goes back to a state of deterioration. Secondly, it's very important that the intervention is complex and it's not a one-sided thing. So if let's say the intervention is about infrastructure, that infrastructure must be utilized to leverage other things. Social development, for instance, is one of the things. I mean, after all, if you put infrastructure on any piece of land, what you're really doing, you're leveraging both social and economic development. And those things, someone must watch that they do develop in tandem. And someone must continually monitor. So it's quite important.
And seeing that return on investment.
For sure. And I think that's the frustration that the minister expressed. That we've been putting a lot of resources, we've been putting a lot of technical assistance, but where is the return on investment? And the dynamic that results in a situation where you don't yield a lot of the return on investment is based on the principles, is rather informed in part by the principles that I referred to earlier.
Well, we are getting into the meat of things now, and it just shows that it's very easy to tar the problems with the brush of capacity constraints or perhaps corruption or mismanagement, but it really does run a lot deeper than that. That said, though, you referenced the fact that we've got protests spilling over into the streets at the moment. There does seem to be growing dissatisfaction with service delivery. How much of that is dissatisfaction with the lack of services, or perhaps expectations that have been raised on the back of the change in leadership and the fact that we're now seeing expectation levels being ratcheted up versus an actual failure of services? Because you drive through a lot of smaller municipalities and you do see the strides that have been made, homes electrified, toilets installed, formal structures, roads, that kind of thing. It's not like nothing has happened. So where do you think the root of a lot of the protest and anger comes from?
Well, someone once said, it's the economy, you fool. And I think that's beginning to apply in our instance. So you're correct. I mean, government has put a lot of infrastructure on the ground. I mean, if just by sheer example, if you travel between Durban let's say, give or take, East London, if you traveled on that path in 1989 when I was a student, and you travel on that path today, massive difference. You see electrification, you see water, you see sanitation. As a result, you see people congregating on the walls of your major routes, your N2, and that's typical of what's happening across the country generally. So that which government has done over the period has yielded that particular result. But I personally, I think that there's something about the failure of the economy, one, to create jobs, and not just jobs, but sustainable jobs, and then to also employ people, thus giving them a sense of security. Because a person that is sitting idle, either in Soweto or in Umtata or wherever the case might be, for 20 years, I mean, we are brewing frustration there. They're unlikely to value the assets that government has put on the ground, irrespective of whether it's a library, it's a toilet. So what do? They churn out their frustration. I mean, we're anthropological after all. I mean, we have to go back to that sense of who we are. And and there's many theories to explain why there is this type. Does it have to be violent? I don't know. I mean, I've never done it, but I'm sure when you sit with people that you look at and say, oh, they are being violent, they have some explanation, which if we were patient enough to understand what that is, probably there's some reasoning. You know,
And it also doesn't help that there's a conditioning here, a precedent that's been set that government does tend to intervene. The president flying back from his international trip
in London,
to intervene in the Northwest crisis, that leaders intervene when there is violent protest, when libraries are burned down, when assets are destroyed. So we've almost created a precedent that's the only way to perhaps wrongly get the attention of leadership. And it speaks to your comment around the lack of intelligence on the ground and perhaps government not being ahead of the curve here to quell any dissatisfaction before it happens.
And I suppose, I mean, it depends. When we speak intelligence, what are we talking about? I'm not talking necessarily about the security intelligence or criminal intelligence. I'm talking about systemically. Do we understand who comes from where that then decides to go and reside in Ekurhuleni, the east of Johannesburg? Why do they choose that particular spot as a spot of arrival? What are they looking for? Once they are there, does that particular geography allow them and create the environment in which they can thrive? In other words, jobs. In other words, social security. In other words, schools and all of those things. Hence, I'm saying it's systemic. So it requires us to have the type of intelligence that will give us the foresight and the know-how of what type of a citizen should we be expecting, and therefore, what type of infrastructure should we be putting in place to accommodate that future citizen that's coming?
Right. They are young, for instance.
What have we done for young people in the space to accommodate them as they arrive in big cities and big municipalities, for that matter? You should also not forget there's something that is called your intermediary cities, who are playing a massive role to sort of create the balance of an overflow into your large municipalities like Johannesburg, and they serve as stopovers. So you get a family or individual stopping over in East London, Buffalo City, whereas their final destination is Cape Town.
And to understand then how this feeds into the land debate, which has tended to focus on the rural areas, peri-urban areas, and agriculture, but actually a large part of the land debate should actually center around cities and land that's either state-owned or lying vacant around cities, and how that is used with the right intelligence around how people are moving and migrating to various centers in order to effectively accommodate these people.
I agree with you, and that's again another totally different topic on its own that may require time. But the fact of the matter is that how we deal with urban land or land in urban areas, we have to be sure that it's not necessarily the same as how we will deal with land in a rural setup. Hence, the minister is correct in saying there are certain municipalities that are in serious crisis. There are some that are not overly dysfunctional, but there's also others that are functional. How you then deal with land as a critical ingredient to creating sustainability in the city, that the type of city that caters for both those that can afford and those that are poor is quite important. And there's no one sector that can do this thing on its own. So you need a serious partnership, a delivering partnership between the public sector and the private sector. You need civil society in place and you need everybody else to be there.
It does look very encouraging that we've got a minister who seems highly energized at the helm. I didn't used to receive too much communication from the Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs, unfortunately. And since he's arrived at the helm, the communication has been quite good. So I'm sure the deputy minister has a good excuse for being sucked into his
event. Well, it is. And I want to apologize on their behalf. I mean, they are currently driving the Integrated Urban Development Framework work, which is work, policy work that's looking at what's the best of creating a city in South Africa that will survive the next 200 years, taking into account urbanization, climate change, how you finance it, you name it, yeah. The kinds of problems that we have and the challenges that we have to deal with.
Building those resilient cities. And part of that as well is this Back to Basics program. What do you make, firstly, just share some of the background to that with the listeners who might be unfamiliar with this program that has been launched. And what do you make of its chances of success?
So Back to Basics, B2B as it is called, was launched, I think, 5 or 6 years ago. I could be mistaken, but it's not something that was launched now. And it was meant to sort of arrest the decay that you see in what you now call the dysfunctional municipalities, I think on the main. But obviously, some of that dysfunctionality is not only in the decaying or dysfunctional municipalities. You also get the same in your what is called your thriving municipalities, particularly the metropolitan area. So it's a policy framework of government. But I think as we implement Back to Basics, the question is, can you also not think about going beyond the basics? And what is that going to mean? Because you cannot be standstill in the face of the types of problems that we're having. So there has to be, for me, a balance between implementing Back to Basics in order that we go beyond the basics. And the basics is about ensuring that a municipality is not just only delivering water and roads. It's about a municipality being able to create life.
Absolutely.
For its citizens.
And, you know, and go beyond just getting its billing right and collecting the revenue.
Sure, it's not just about the billing problem.
It's not just about the billing problem, although for a lot of people in Joburg, they'd say it probably still is anyway. Sithole, thank you very much for taking us through a range of issues tonight. Obviously, a very complex situation around local government, and we wish the government at a national level and all the role players every success in trying to turn things around, and hopefully we can see a return to some semblance of normality and the level of protests subside. That was Sithole Mbanga, CEO of the South African Cities Network.